Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham podcast. We hope this message will be informative, inspirational, and helpful. Donations to support this work are greatly appreciated. Visit www.cslbellingham.org and click on the donate button. Remember to share our podcast. Thank you.
That human race, that's us. And we're all part of that one life. That one life that connects us all. That one mind, that one presence, that one spirit, that one heart. We're all part of that. And we can turn around and know that we are seeing ourselves in each other. Before I get into the prayer, though, I want to acknowledge the other practitioners. My name is Leo Brody. I'm the practitioner of the day. And my wife, Cindy Clay, is the other practitioner of the day, and this another practitioner of the day. We all have different duties every time we cycle through, and we have Wanda here, and Francine was doing the meditation this morning. So we want you to know that we're always looking for opportunities to pray for you. If you want prayer, you know where to get it from us. And there's different ways to do it. One is there's a vessel, we call it. It's just a pot that you can put your prayer, written prayer, in, and then someone will pray for you. And you can approach one of us wearing a stole. This is the magic garment that we put on to let you know who we are and what our role is. And so we welcome you approaching us if you want to and asking for prayer. We also have prayer requests online, and every weekday morning at 7 a.m., someone of us gets up early, and well, it's early for some of us, and does a Zoom prayer meeting, which you're welcome to do. It's just 5 to 10 minutes long. Great way to start your day. So with that, let's turn within for a moment and know that presence of spirit in each of us, and know that that spirit is working and operating in this service today, to bring the highest truth, the biggest joy, the greatest love, and spiritual presence to each one of us. And we all have a personal experience of knowing that we're not outside of that. We are it. That life, that joy, that love emerges from within us because it is the spirit, that one spirit that is within each of us and guides us through. And so we relax into that, knowing that it is true. And with that, I say, and so it is.
What I first want to talk about is being human. And what I mean by that is that we're all just regular people, living regular human lives, surrounded by a whole bunch of other humans. And sometimes we're full of laughter and know how worthy we are and how valuable our very existence is. And then other times we don't quite feel strong enough and we don't feel like things are going that well and nothing we do seems to be right. Anybody have days like that? Yep. I kind of had a week like that. But, you know, Ernest Holmes had something to say about that, as Ernest had many things to say. So Ernest is the founder of Science of Mind. And he talked about all those varying feelings in a book that was called Know Yourself. Here's what he said. I do not think we should make such a claim to divinity that we forget that we are human. For our humanity proclaims the creativity of the divine. Human we are, doing the best we can and ever seeking a fuller realization of our source. Our experience is filled with laughter and tears and singing and dancing and praying and exulting and sometimes falling into the depths of despair. So we need to have a good-natured flexibility towards all that we encounter and not fight against life but cooperate with it. So, you know, I think if I had known Ernest Holmes, I have a sense that he would be a pretty regular person who has also had that capacity to be a voice for the divine. So a guy that, you know, sat around on the deck, his deck, in loose pants and a plaid shirt, and just kind of talked with him. And so I hope to do some of that today. I want to start this with relationships, our relationships with each other. Because sometimes we forget that relationships have an element of a social agreement in them. You know, there's certain ways we have agreed as a group or as a culture to be with each other in relationship. I'm reading an amazing book called What It Takes to Heal. The author's name is Prentice Hemphill, and she's an African-American therapist who works a lot with community activists and people of color. So her twist on all of this is how culture and history impact our beliefs and our behaviors in ways that we're not even conscious of, you know, at that unconscious level. So here's how she put what Ernest Holmes was just talking about. It's hard to notice how history can invade each moment through our habits and our conditioning that we've come to embody. How it can contour who we care for and our ability to really see one another. We've inherited beliefs and patterns of relationship by watching how the people around us do it. So who's listened to and seen? Who's lifted up? Who's pushed down? We learn this to find out who we are in relationship to who we're living with, who we've been in relationship to the other people in the world. So I know for my life that there definitely have been times when I've kind of gone to sleep. I used to call it sleepwalking through my life. And it was those times where I kind of got up each day and did the same things, ate the same food, did the same routine, got home, ate dinner, watched TV, went to bed, woke up, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. And Ernest Holmes calls that a life of living at the law of averages, sort of living at the level of the lowest common denominator. And he urges us to do something different than that. Because if you live at the lowest common denominator, the universe observes that and says, that must be the kind of life you want. You must want kind of an average, medium-level life. Which is what's happening to a lot of us when we're really not paying attention or being conscious in choosing how we want a life, how we want to live this one precious life that we've been given. So Ernest talks about that we can become more conscious in the choices we're making and base them on what we think is the purpose of our life, or the focus of our life, or the intention of our time this year, or this month, or this week. And by being conscious in choosing, I want my week to look like this, we can use the laws of life, the laws of attraction, the laws of positivity, and other principles about what science of mind teaches about how life works, and create the life we love. And then we can practice that through spiritual practices called meditation and prayer and affirmations, where we're actually practicing and learning how to do it every day in our life. Here's one of those regular human things that happen. So it's the kind of manifesting from the inside out. So what does spirit moving through you, or your high self, or your intuitive self say, here's why I'm here, or here's what's in front of me for me to take the next step towards. And it creates what's called a mental equivalent for your life. Like if what you want to focus on is I'm valuable and worthy, you can have that be your mantra, so that each experience you have, you're emanating out into the world, I'm valuable, I'm worthy. And what Holmes says is that's how we assert how we are individually as a person, rising above just the law of average into a highly specialized use of the law. What that means is you're using like the law of attraction or what you're focusing on to attract to you what's going to bring you that thing, in this example, being seen and feeling valuable, being seen and feeling worthy. So you're attracting that kind of experience into your life. And as we keep practicing, they're going to feel awkward at first, or you have to kind of write reminders to yourself, but soon they'll become natural. This belief system becomes natural and just how you are in the world, and your life changes. You get things start smoothing out. You start getting support. You start seeing things that help you in the world. You start to live a life that you enjoy living. So Hemphill, the modern writer, says something from her point of view. Everything changes when our emotions are free from the dictates of history, when we can relate in an undefended way and find our path to one another. So finding our path to one another is when we find, here I'm going to tape this because I see my sound die coming to me. Okay, we're going to try this. Maybe I should take that off. Okay. So let's just take a breath in and refocus. So everything changes when our emotions are free from the rules about how life is supposed to be. And we can come fresh to each other and find the new way to each other or to our life. Okay, everybody in the room starts to pray for me, okay? You get to dance when the mic works. Oh, the mic works. Okay, I want to tell you a story. This is a story I learned as a young adult about my own maternal grandmother. Because my maternal grandmother died just a couple days after I was born in the same hospital. She had come up to help my mom with my birth and then rested. And died on her bed in her hotel room. So that's another story. I'll tell that one later. But I want to tell the story of her youth. She was one of many children, I think eight children, one boy and the rest were girls, in a sheep ranch in the central part of Montana. They were Scottish immigrants, and I'm sure they raised sheep in Scotland as well. And so what was expected for her life was that she would marry a sheep farmer and have kids and carry on the tradition. So that was the story of her culture and the expectation for her life. And I wish I could have asked her, but something inside of her said, I want something different. I want something different and more than that. And so she saved up money, and I don't know how she earned money, but as a young teenager, young adult, she saved up enough money for a train ticket to go from Central Montana to New York City. She applied for and was accepted into a secretarial training school. Now, this would be in 19-teens. So this was early in the 1900s. And she went to secretarial school, and she learned how to run an office. And she came back, again on the train, to the capital of Montana, which was Helena, and started working in law offices. So she created a totally different life of possibility for herself. Out of circumstances that would not, to anyone else, look like they would support that. There wasn't money in the family. Nobody else got educated. Everybody just raised sheep. So by taking that chance in life and expanding her options, she changed the whole trend of what was possible for me as well. So working in the law offices, she met interesting people. She met a judge who became my grandfather and had my mom. And when my mom told the story of my grandmother, she told me about this broadening choice that she'd made. And I don't think my mom understood what she was telling me is, you can do this too. But she had done something herself. Mom was the first person in her side of the family that got a college education. And so there was something in the line, in the tradition of my family, that gave us possibility, that gave us, what do you want to do to create your life? And so Mabel June is who I'm named after, Deborah June. And so every time I say my name, June, it's in memory to Mabel, who made that trip to New York City and changed the life for herself, her daughter, and for her granddaughter. So that's what I want to say, is we can lift up and have a life of more choices than maybe we get handed to us as children. And what we get handed to us as children, you know, our parents want to keep us safe. But they're telling us the rules of, you know, you need to be this way. So I want to just give you an idea about three kinds of skills you can begin to put in place in your life about how to live a life lifted up, a life beyond just the common denominator. And it's being authentic, finding your own flexible boundaries, and trust. So let me go through those. So this skill of being authentic means that you are comfortable just showing the world who you are. Your strengths, your weaknesses, what you know for sure, what you're still trying to explore and come to your own answer to. And it's a skill that can be learned. It's not about your personality. It's about how you decide you want to be with people in the world and how you want to interact. It's a willingness and an ability to be yourself and still be in the discovery of who you really are. So there's that sense, again, I know who I am and I'm open to growing or changing, or adding something new into my life. Because our authentic self isn't just formed once. It's achieved, and it's something that we become when we stop trying so hard to be what we think people think we should be. It's a funny, funny thing. We can develop a willingness to show our strengths and our weaknesses, and in that way, actually open up the possibility to a deeper connection with other people. Because you're not having a mask or a wall anymore, pretending to be perfect or pretending your life is good all the time, but being real with each other and asking for support and help when you need it. That brings us closer together. The second skill is the proper use of
boundaries. So boundaries are the this is a quote from Hemphill. Boundaries are the distance at which I can love you and me simultaneously. So it's a way of honoring ourselves, how we shelter ourselves when we need that shelter, and how we can build relationships with each other that benefit both of us. Because it's an idea of balance. Now, it's not a stagnant one time, we make this agreement and that will never change, because it's a dance. So you're dancing with whoever you're in relationship, if that's a friend or a family member or a spouse. There's an ebb and a flow, a meeting in the middle. I think if you've watched people in long-term relationships, you can see that sometimes somebody does more to support the family while somebody else is doing something, and then it shifts. There's a back and forth, there's a dance, an equal partnership. And it's mutual, it's more just, and it's negotiated. It's like you talk about it. I can give this much. More than that, I'm going to feel not good, like I'm being asked to do too much. But I'm willing to do this much. Will you meet me there? Now, as you can even hear, I can hear in this the way in this community we are with each other. You know, there's all of these service opportunities. And each of us decides, this is the way I can serve and support this community. And as we each do that, we're in a dance with each other. And sometimes you're going to be more engaged and maybe doing something here every other day. And then you'll step back and a new person will come in. So I urge you to look at this thing of flexibility in your agreements, in your boundaries, in your edges. And the final skill is trust. I think Dr. Bob talked about trust last week as being one of the things he saw that we were learning from each other here. And it's not as simple as it seems. None of these are as simple as it seems. Again, I'll quote Hemphill. She says, just as who and how we trust is often shaped by our interpersonal experiences, it's also conditioned in us through the way that society assigns value to people. Any society that ranks people based on race or gender or some other outside characteristic is teaching us that trust should not be allocated by merit, personal merit, but how closely somebody conforms to whatever has been accepted as the valued norm. So, as I said, I've seen each of these skills in this community, and I just want to mirror them back to you. Because we're in a very wonderful adventure together. We are co-creating a new way of being the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham. We're in the birthing process, and it's great adventure. But we sometimes we need some help, or we need some skills in moving through change. And so what I'm saying today is you are already planting the seeds for each of these three skills. I'm going to start with being authentic with each other. And my example is with the practitioners. Each month, the practitioners meet in their monthly gathering, and we start each meeting with what ends up in a prayer, a group prayer. But it starts with each person saying, here's where I'm at now. And it's an update on the good things in your life and the challenging things in your life. And they then turn that into a prayer request, which we do a prayer out loud each meeting, and then release that. But it's a way of not pretending that everything is perfect all the time, but that we're each facing challenges. And we can love each other and support each other and pray each other through that. That's part of being in spiritual community, and you do that here. These flexible boundaries I've touched upon in our ways we volunteer here, you can see that there's choice involved in how you want to support building the community. And there's opportunities for you to help put up the tables and chairs for a potluck. Opportunities to be on the coffee team and make that socializing after service a more fun thing. But you choose how much you want to be involved in supporting the community. And then it's our job as people who ask for support not to over-ask the same people. I think you might have also experienced that. Sometimes people are working too hard, and we haven't met that balance, which is I'm loving myself at the same time I'm loving you. So that's, we're looking, seeking balance, not overburdening people, but giving from our heart and being loved and supported and creating community together, getting stronger together. And finally, trust. You know, we've been through these workshops with each other that Dr. Bob led us. And in them, people talked about what they really, really liked about the community and where they thought things could be shifted or made better. And that is sometimes something that requires courage to say, it's easier to say, I just love everything about this community. It takes more courage to say, and here's something that I think we could think about shifting or improving or focusing on more of. And so you did that together as a community and created a vision and a prayer for a new minister, because we know we're in a change process. And learning to trust each other, I can count on you. You will be truly who you are with me. You will tell me what's just enough for you to give, what's not, what is too much to give. And together, we're building that firm foundation for creating and attracting our next minister. So we're building healthy relationships with each other, and that builds a healthy community, and that will attract to us a healthy senior minister, the goal, right? So again, one final quote from our writer. Our relationships can be freed from expectations imposed upon by history or oppression, or our own stories, our own experiences, and then our relationships can have more room and be more balanced, and I can put priority on them. So getting curious about my past, your past, how that past has influenced the choices we've made in our life, where our edges are, where the boundaries are, where is too much, where is enlivening and broadening and bringing freedom into your life? These are all questions of curiosity to ask yourself. Another question is, am I willing to lay down the old rules or the old scripts for something to be better? Like my grandmother Mabel was willing to lay down the old script that she would become the wife of a sheep farmer for something new, something that was calling her to grow and evolve and expand, even when the conditions around her didn't look very supportive. So we can let go of the old ways if they're not supporting the life we want to live. We can let go and write new rules about how people get to be, how they get to live their life. And so as we go into this very special time together, of attracting and hiring our next spiritual leader, our senior minister, think about these skills of being real, being authentic, having clear but flexible boundaries and trusting each other, trusting yourself, trusting the senior minister once that person is here. These skills are going to bring us closer together as a community in relationship with each other and help us find those same qualities in the person we pick to be our co-creator of the next phases of this community. It's an adventure, one which we all said yes to, and we're on it together. And so as our final step, I want to ask you if you'd join me in reading the prayer that we created to attract the next senior minister. And I think we've got it on the slides. This prayer was written by the video team. That is the video that's people deciding if they're going to apply for the job or watching. And Leo Brody wrote the first part of this prayer, which a few other editors stepped in too. And so it represents the group. These were the product of the visioning work we did as a community, and these were the qualities we said we wanted in a minister. So this has now been turned into a prayer that we say together, at least on Sunday and more in your private time, because we are invoking the law of attraction. We want this person to step forward and say, I'm here. So let's begin. There is one infinite mind, one creative intelligence that encompasses and flows through all beings. There is one love that embraces and sustains all its creation. As members of our beloved spiritual community of CSL Bellingham, we affirm our oneness with this one mind and one love. I speak my word of truth that the perfect senior minister for CSL Bellingham welcomes this opportunity. This person brings us everything we envision and even more. Someone who treasures our teachings, our community, and our location in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. I know that love is leading us to partner in creating the perfect next chapter in the story of our center. I am grateful our next senior minister is well prepared and delighted to join our community in co-creating our abundant future. We celebrate our divine match. I release these words into the law of good and let them go, confident that all is unfolding as it should. And so it is. Yay!